Good morning, everybody, and welcome to this new episode of Spanish Loops. Hola, Jorge, good morning. How are you doing?
Hello, Francisco. Good morning, or good afternoon, or good evening. Depends, you know, when our listeners are hearing us. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic.
Great, as usual. So here in my side. Okay, what are we going to talk about today, Francisco? Something very, very Iberian, I would say.
Well, I think this is a world evolution thing. We're going to be talking about ceramics in history.
Oh.
Well, ceramics in Spanish history.
Okay, perfect. Go ahead, please.
So shall we start with a little bit of history?
Yeah, why not? Yeah, just take your usual minute and a half to tell us, to embrighten us with everything that you know.
So ceramics in Spain, in the Iberian Peninsula, we can find them all the way from Neolithic times. We're going to find Neolithic, quite basic things, very much utensils for the home, you know, little plates, little cups, things. They have done some DNAs to one of the cups that was found in mid-south of Spain. And back then, those Neolithics, they were drinking something similar to the beer, right? So it was just home utensils. Then, as it evolved, Iberos? How do you say that in Spanish? In English,
Iberians.
Okay, the Iberians. When the Iberians didn't come because they were here, but the Iberians were the most important population in Spain. Again, Spain is not Spain, in the peninsula, sorry. We're going to find that this evolution, a big, big evolution in the way of ceramics. They do have plates and cups, all of this, but we're going to find more cooking utensils. We're going to find little tripods where they would put fire underneath and cook inside of it. And then the plates are not going to be just terracotta or, you know, clay plates. They're going to be decorated. We're going to find humans in those Iberian plates. We're going to find animals as well. Okay, so really, it was a very, very home-based, but much more evolved with a lot of decorations.
So that sounds to me like a basic pottery?
Yes, yes, we're talking mega basic pottery. The big evolution came with the Phoenicians. The Phoenicians are the big traders in the Mediterranean. They were coming from Italy from Spain to Greece, from Greece to Turkey, from Turkey to Morocco. All along the Mediterranean, we're going to find the Phoenicians. And the Phoenicians, they needed to export, or the main goal was exports. From here, we're going to start finding all of these new types of ceramics, new ways of pottery, much bigger, that can hold grain or can hold even liquids. We're going to start with the trading of liquids in the Mediterranean. Remember that here in Spain, we have very good olive oil and very good wine. So the Phoenicians started it. The Romans mastered it. The Roman Empire.
Francisco, excuse me. We don't have good olive oil and good wine. We have the best olive oil and the best wine in the world. I'm sorry.
Sorry for that. We do have the best one. Anyway, so as I was saying, the Phoenicians, they started with all of this trade in the Mediterranean. When the Roman Empire came in, it was major. And the peninsula, Iberian Peninsula, being the big producers of wine and olive oil, they master all of these huge dolmias, these big barrels, where they could ship goods from here all the way, all along the Mediterranean.
So it sounds to me like big amphoras, let's put it that way.
Big, big, big pots, let's put it that way, with a lid on top, that they could trade everything from one side of the Mediterranean all the way to the other side.
Mm-hmm.
Right after the Roman Empire came down, you know, the Goths, Visigoths came, but we make it all the way to the year 711. The Muslim Empire comes in Spain, and we're going to have 800 years of amazing, let's not say just pottery, amazing tiles.
Let's remind our listeners that there are two dates or 2 years in Spanish history that is a before and after. One is the one that you just mentioned, Francisco, and we have mentioned many times in our podcast, which is the year 711, the Muslim invasion, and also 1492, that everybody knows. about that year. Okay, so please, I'm sorry, I just wanted to make the little input. Thank you.
Well, what the thing is that when the Muslim Empire in the 711 comes into the peninsula, we always have to think that at that moment, Spain is not Spain, Portugal is not Portugal. It's just the peninsula. They come into the peninsula and they conquer the whole thing in less than 3 years. They bring the most advanced techniques in agriculture, farming, everything, and especially clay. They are very good doing bricks. That's why most of the massive constructions that we have in Spain, they're not made in stone. They're made with bricks, which is a way of, let's not say pottery, but it's a way of making pottery. But also, the most important thing that they brought, please correct me if you think I'm not right, it's the amazing tiles.
I totally agree, Francisco. Yes, by all means. They developed, it was like a kind of an evolution of what it was before, because they had their own technique. And as you were said, that invasion of the Muslims in the Iberian Peninsula, it took very few time in history. And mainly because I assume it's because of the geographical proximity. It was in the south and southeast of Spain where it developed more, maybe because of the soil there. We had the quality that needed to have to make those tiles. And, up to the point that it was used in a huge variety of ways. Ceiling tiles, for instance, they were using in the interiors of buildings, and one of the most famous using Spanish tiles is of the roofing material. They were used to decorate fountains, courtyards, walls, and other surfaces. Also, what they brought in are the bright colors and unusual color combinations.
That to me is probably the most important legacy that they have given to us, because really those bright Muslim tiles, when you go to the south of Spain, when you go to the Alhambra, when you go to Sevilla, to the Alcázar, you see those magnificent, magnificent tiles. I don't know, Jorge, but to me, when you go in, let's put the Alhambra, which I think is one of the buildings that everybody has in their mind, with all of this decoration, all of these glazed tiles everywhere around. Let's take ourselves to Granada in the summer. It's super hot. And suddenly you have all of these rooms covered with clay, with all of these glazed, crystally bright colors that are always very cool. They put the temperature down. So besides the aesthetics of it, the incredible aesthetics, those color combinations, those patterns, it's incredible. But also they were used as weather adjusting a system for the extreme heat of Andalusia.
True. I mean, this in the late, let's say 50, 60 or maybe 70 years, something was developed all over the world that it's called air conditioning. So in those days, obviously, they had to find a way to adapt themselves to the extreme hot temperatures in the summer, and this in some places also the extreme cold temperatures in the winter. So they found that it works for both purposes: for summer, isolation of the heat, and in winter, isolation from the cold weather.
Obviously, these 800 years of amazing Muslim tiles, they became part of the Spanish tiles. Wherever you go in Spain, we're going to find amazing tiles, much more Christianized, much more with different themes, but all of them breathing from the roots of the Muslim heritage. Let's make something clear. When I say Spain, I'm a Spaniard, so it's Spain. But also if you go to Portugal, where they also have the Muslim heritage, you're going to find breathtaking tiles. All the way to the north, to Porto.
Yeah. We will talk about the influence also in Portugal in a little while. I just want to mention something here that I'm very happy that you did talk about that, which are the clear examples of the Alhambra in Granada and the Alcázar in Sevilla. By the way, the Alcázar in Sevilla is a royal palace still in use, and it's the oldest royal palace still in use in Europe from the late 1200s. I have to tell you, in those days, as we have mentioned many times in these podcasts, you have to forget when we talk about history about borders, because borders, they were not what they are today. Okay, so when we say the Kingdom of Granada, the Kingdom of Castilla, the Kingdom of Cordoba, or the Kingdom of Toledo, we go back in times, they are totally different, you know, scenarios. So in those days, when you mentioned Granada, the Alhambra, and the Alcázar in Sevilla, both kingdoms, they were, they had a border, and they were cooperating in those days in the periods of peace with no wars. So what happened? They were cooperating with each other. So many of the masters that they worked at the Alhambra Palace, they worked also at the Alcázar of Sevilla. So that's why it's if you're not familiar with them, and I mean, our job as tour guides is visiting those places constantly, taking our tour members to those places. So if we see a photo and someone tells you, "Oh, look, this is the Alhambra," you can tell, well, no, it's the Alcázar, or vice versa, because many of the works there are so similar, and the technique it was used in both places. So they were cooperating, except, you know, when the times of wars and guerrilla wars around, trying to gain some or conquer some territories. But yeah, I mean, the technique that they developed is absolutely magnificent.
You are right. I mean, really, the art is art, no matter the religion. I mean, that was something totally different. Talking about religion, we have forgotten the third most important religion back then in Spain, Judaism.
True.
Here in Spain, the Jewish population, they had a huge impact as well in our pottery. They did a lot of trading with pottery, but also we find here in Spain, thanks to the legacy that they left, many utensils for the rituals that they did. Okay, so all of those things, probably the Jewish heritage, it's more about rituals than for home utensils. The home utensils, mm-hmm. they would be pretty much similar one to each other, yep. at this point, okay, by mm-hmm. the 13, 1400s. But what makes the Jewish ceramics special is because most of them they were used for preparation for rituals, etc., etc., etc.
True. That's, I totally agree with everything that you're saying. But Francisco, I did mention earlier the date, which is 1492. That year changed a little bit the course of history in the world. It's not to be here like pretending to be the center of the world at all, but it was very important that year for history of the world. So guess what? I mean, if we were conquering, I don't like to use the expression, but that's the way it is, okay? If we're conquering the Americas in those years, in the 1500s, you know that they developed also in the other side of the Atlantic another style. It's like another evolution, which is called in the history of tile making or ceramic, Spanish tile making in the early colonial era. Not far from Madrid, going west, like about an hour and a half, there is a city called Talavera de la Reina, which is it was the hub of tile making in the 15th and 16th century. And the city was so well situated that became the hub of ceramics arts due to the mix of settlers, many of whom had the artistic imagination and technical know-how to make beautiful and durable tiles. It was called the City of Ceramics. And in those days, also, we have to mention that the Dutch, they were also masters in the ceramics as well. They developed their own technique. But because of the evolution of this tile making here in the Iberian Peninsula, Dutch settlers lived in the city. They moved over here and they gave also or contributed with their knowledge of Delft pottery techniques. It was the key to the city's eventual success. And also, if you put that together with so many Arab settlers in the city, they had the art and tools help Talavera develop a distinctive style of tiles. So you have different types. One of those are called Maiolica, M-A-Y-O-L-I-C-A, Maiolica tiles. These tiles are glazed to achieve a unique look. That distinctive glaze, it comes from the fact that the enamel used to glaze them includes metallic elements along with glass oxide. It makes the tiles durable and also give them a lustrous gloss. By the way, I have to tell you, that kind of metallic glaze that used to be used in the tiles used to be copper. Nowadays, is totally forbidden because it's
not very healthy.
Exactly. It happens that is toxic, right?
Just a little bit.
Yeah. So, but these are very, very distinct. They have developed a new technique some decades ago that it gives you the impression to have the same style, that glazing, shiny thing on the tiles, but doesn't include copper. Obviously, it doesn't last as long as with the copper surface over it because it was covering it. Well, obviously, when we went over there and we settled, we took many places around, even names. You know, there are many cities that are named after Spanish places. There are many customs and part of the gastronomy as well. And we have imported from the other side. But of course, now that we're talking about tiles and ceramics, I have to say that there is a very strong influence, especially what today is Mexico. And the Spanish style tile making in Mexico was mainly in the city of Puebla. And that city was founded a decade after the Spanish defeated the Aztecs in 1531. The indigenous people of the area had a long history of producing earthenware products. So they were making their own pottery. However, they did not use the tin glazing techniques or tools like a potter's wheel. Actually, in the Church of Santo Domingo, they began the construction in 1571. Tile makers from Talavera de la Reina, they were sent to Mexico. The monks wanted a new church to have tile artworks that resembled the found at the churches that they knew in Europe. And the Spanish artisans worked with local craftspeople and taught them their tile-making techniques. They blended their own techniques with artistic styles, with what they learned from the Spanish craftspeople to develop their unique take on Spanish ceramic tiles. Their tiles were made for the same purposes, to be used as decoration, as ceiling tiles, or roof tiles as well. And making a little recap about all these, you know, in Spain, Mexico, and Portugal that we mentioned earlier very briefly, they are filled with buildings that they use the historic or modern Spanish tiles. However, due to the popularity of this type of tiles throughout the centuries, it can also be found in more unexpected places.
When you say unexpected places, what do you mean? Where can we find those special Spanish tiles?
Well, homeowners in London, often buy reclaimed Spanish ceiling tiles to use when renovating their homes. Yep. The pool area at the YMCA on the west side of Manhattan in New York City features a variety of Spanish art tiles. And also in the Spanish town of Manises, east of Spain, also very famous for the tiles manufacturing. If a surface can be tiled, it probably is. Located very close to Valencia, has been for several centuries synonymous with the manufacture of exquisite tiles and ceramic pieces. That, by the way, in the city of Manises, the one I just mentioned, the production over there began on the early 14th century, and it went on until the 18th century. It was a very delicate pottery pieces that they made, blended with Arabic and Christian influences. And they were famous across the continent and beyond. Deep blue, their signature color, was common in many of the pieces.
Well, Jorge, when we visit Portugal, to me, one of the big tile cities, I would say it's Porto. You find all of these very beautiful, beautiful tiles.
Yeah, true. Mm-hmm. Well, when you visit in Portugal, as you said, Porto, and also the capital, Lisbon, glazed ceramic tiles is a common sight. They are adorning buildings both inside and out, adding intrigue, shimmer, and variety. By the way, the name of those tiles in Spanish, we call them azulejos, A-Z-U-L-E-J-O-S. It's the same spelling in Portuguese, but they pronounce it azulejos. And it comes from the Arabic word al-sulaysha, meaning small polished stones. that dates back from the 13th century. A little curiosity is that about in Portugal, the very first Portuguese art comprising ceramic tiles appeared shortly after the Moors invaded Portugal, bringing their culture with them. Today, painted tiles that depict scenes and narratives are often installed on benches, train stations, the interior of churches, sidewalks, and houses. Francisco, have you been in Lisbon?
Mm-hmm, yes.
Have you visited the Tiles Museum that they have in Lisbon?
No, I haven't.
Well, actually, for you and everybody else who's listening to this podcast, I strongly recommend you to visit that Tile Museum. As far as I know, it's the only museum in the world, huge place, dedicated to the history of the tiles. And something very, very curious that amazes me every time I go there is the panel, long panel. It might be something like about, I don't know, maybe 30 meters long, which is like about 300 feet long. And you probably know that Portugal suffered a very devastating earthquake in 1751 that destroyed the entire city. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, believe it or not, there was a panel, that panel I just mentioned, made out of tiles, that is painted tile by tile and hand-painted, all of them, a map of the city of Lisbon from the other side of the river. And it is the only record that they have about how was Lisbon before the earthquake. And it's really, really curious. So you can see landmarks in that panel, like, for example, I don't know, maybe some churches that didn't collapse because of the strong construction of the buildings. But you can see the landmarks and how it has changed totally the landscaping of the city of Lisbon.
Really, the tiles, the ceramic in Portugal, as they also breathe from this Muslim heritage, it's amazing. Jorge, where can we find more tiles? And what is the characteristic of the Portuguese tiles?
Well, I have to tell you something here just to put everybody in situation that the initial Azulejos technique, it was very simplistic. They would develop more from the 13th through the 15th century. During this period, believe it or not, the Spanish city of Sevilla became a significant center for ceramic tile arts. As the style developed, tile artists began to create multicolor variations that often depicted militaristic or religious themes. And due to the proximity of Sevilla with Portugal, you know, it became like a kind of a trading place. The characteristic of a Portuguese tile is that they use very much the blue palette colors in all the tiles. All that makes a very high contrast because the background is white. So using just blue, light blue, deep blue, halfway through, together with the white backgrounds, to me is unique. I mean, you show me a panel with that characteristic, and I immediately know if it is Portuguese or somewhere else. And well, you can find beautiful tiles in the National Palace of Sintra, which is in the outskirts of the city of Lisbon. Also in the very modern opera house in Porto, which is called Casa da Música, the House of Music. Inside, they have loads of Portuguese azulejos. Also, the characteristic is that they are just simple geometric tiles, okay? And there is one of my favorite places in Portugal, which is like about, I would say, a couple of hours north from Lisbon, which is a hotel that was supposed to be a royal palace that in the early 20th century, the revolution that happened in Portugal, they took out that palace to be before it was inaugurated from the state. So it became a hotel. And that hotel is filled with beautiful, beautiful panels regarding some kinds of battles that the Portuguese people did, and the very, very distinctive parts of the history of Portugal. Well, Francisco, now just giving a little bit of history here, and the blue and white Portuguese tiles. I forgot to mention that the pombalin style. Pombalin comes from the word pombal. Pombal was the name of the Marquis of Pombal, who restored the city of Lisbon after the earthquake of 1755. So the first Marquis of Pombal, whose name was Sebastião José de Carvalho Melo, led rebuilding the city, and this resulted in the creation of the Pombalin style in tiles. So what about the evolution of all this style making tiles, and if it's pottery, just tiles or whatever else, Francisco, what about in the 20th century? Has it changed anything regarding the way it used to be done before?
Yes, well, the 20th century here in Spain, we're doing amazing, amazing tiles. And the work of tiles and ceramics has always been very important, both in the construction, the houses, in the decorative arts, in everywhere, we're going to find tiles. One of the most important tile users, it was Rafael Gaustavino. A lot of people don't know about it. If you have been following our podcast, we've talked about Rafael. He was from Valencia. He was an architect, and he went to the United States at the beginning of the 20th century. And he started to construct buildings and infrastructures that they were very light and very well protected against fires. What he did, he was coming from Spain, he knows about Gothic architecture and all of these pointed arches and all of this type of construction. And he applied into these constructions tiles. Tiles that have been glazed, and in case of fire, they will not fall down. Cities like New York City, you're going to find a lot of his work. All of the subway of New York, all of those platforms that you see that have white tiles, those are Gaustavino's style. Okay, those are many of them that were designed by these gentlemen.
Is that person the same person that made the ceiling of Central Station in New York City?
He designed it, yeah.
He designed it. So, because we have talked about him in one of our podcasts, haven't we?
Exactly, we have. So, very important use of tiles. If we come to Spain in the arts, we're going to find Pablo Picasso. We've talked a thousand times about Pablo Picasso. He was in love with ceramics. Okay, so he would do all of this pottery, artistic, that now you can find in museums everywhere around the world. So really, Pablo Picasso used it. But if there's one person in the Spanish art scene who used tiles, not just pottery, in this case, tiles, we have to talk about Gaudí. Gaudí, if anybody has been to La Sagrada Familia, but especially to the Güell Park, is where you find all of these broken tiles. We call them trancadís.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's right.
And it is, let's say, the trademark of Antonio Gaudí. He really used all of these leftover potteries and tiles and apply them into the art, into his construction. So really, it's a very modern way of using tiles and pottery.
Well, actually, Gaudí had the idea of using that technique when he went to one of those tiles factory and they saw the broken tiles in a pile there. And then he just asked, what are you going to do with those broken tiles? I said, oh, we're going to do nothing. We're going to just throw it away. And I said, oh, what a waste. So that's when he became with the idea of using those remains, let's put it, or leftovers of broken tiles that were done while manufacturing. And he had that wonderful idea that, by the way, I have to tell you, Francisco, that coincidences in history. Apparently, it is recorded that Gaudí never left Catalonia. He never traveled. That's what they say. But if you go to Portugal, something similar happened. You know, those parallel things that happens in history that might have no connections at all, but it's the you know, just pure coincidence that I have visited some places in Portugal, old palaces, that they were using the same technique in a different way, okay? But when you see them, it's like, oh, this is like Gaudí's. I mean, and this is seen from a Spanish point of view. Obviously, if a Portuguese see Gaudí's work, they will say, oh, this is like our style in Portugal, okay? But it's they were using the same thing, exactly the same thing. And it's very, very unusual and pretty, I have to say.
If we move a little bit more into history, we're going to go to 1950s, and we're going to find the birth of a very famous porcelain factory here in Spain. It's called Lladró, Lladro. They are from Valencia, and they make these beautiful, delicate porcelain figures.
You know, Francisco, when I started working many years ago, in my early years of working, which I wasn't a tour guide, in those days in Spain, you could work when you were 14 years old. And I worked at the airport in Malaga as a waiter, just to pay my high school and everything. I was totally amazed about the number of American tourists that they were going home with the big boxes of Lladró. I could not believe it.
It's a huge company now. The thing is that the image, especially for us as Spanish people, about Lladró, it's a very old style type of porcelain, you know, very delicate with flowers made petal by petal.
Very delicate and very expensive.
Everything is handmade and hand-painted and hand-decorated. I mean, they have to be expensive because they are works of art. The thing is that the image we have is this little old style that, you know, your grandma had on top of her television or something like, I don't want it. The thing is that now, today, the House of Lladró, they have totally changed this point of view. And now with their know-how, the knowledge of doing this porcelain, they do amazing modern sculptures. I mean, they have modern figures, they have children's figure. I mean, they have the whole universe now of Lladró. You have shops of Lladró in Tokyo, in New York City, in London. If you have a chance to go to a Lladró shop, please go ahead and enter. It's going to be very expensive, but just for the artistry of it, I think it's worth visiting.
Francisco, do you remember in our last Christmas special that I mentioned something about our experiences as kids in Christmas, that I used to go to my aunt's house? That she lived in a big house, and one of the rooms was decorated just with the nativity scene. Mm-hmm. The jewel of that huge mammoth nativity scene that my aunt used to mount every single year for Christmas was little baby Jesus. He was a Lladró figure. That was the jewel. I broke it.
Bro, baby Jesus.
I broke it, yeah.
Baby Jesus. I think you're going to hell, boy.
I don't know, but I remember that day. It was a family drama.
I can imagine.
I imagine if my aunt was my mother, if she happened to be my mother, she probably could have given me in adoption to somebody else.
That's it. You are going out of the house.
It was a national drama that day, of the huge big thing when I broke that thing. So just imagine, you know, if a little tiny figure of baby Jesus for a nativity scene, it was the jewel of a working class family, that it was really expensive. Imagine how expensive it could be something. And I have here a little anecdote to tell you that it happened to me many years ago. I mean, in one of those shops, I was touring some tour members, and one of them, they appeared when they had their free time after just to go back to or get back to Madrid with a huge big box. Huge. And when I say huge, I mean like double the size of a regular suitcase. And I said to him, there was a couple, I said, what's that? What are you carrying in there? Oh, I'm carrying here a carriage with horses and three people on the carriage and the horseman carrying them. Of course, I'm very curious. I didn't say anything. I said, oh, good for you. Well done. And I went, the next time I went back to Toledo, I saw the same thing in a window of one of those shops. And I just, out of curiosity, asked for the price.
Okay, shock me. How much was that?
It was 25,000 euros.
Holy moly.
25,000 euros, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. What? That's right.
So yeah, it's expensive. It's beautiful.
It's very expensive. Yeah, that's right.
25. Ooh.
Yeah.
I could finish paying my mortgage with that.
Yeah, I mean, it could give me a good help just to pay mine.
Well, yeah, it's the other one. It's a really, really beautiful. Anyway, Jorge, I think we have covered a little bit of all the ceramics, porcelain, tiles in Spain, all the way from Neolithic and Iberian times all the way to today.
Yes, as everybody has noticed here, we don't like talking at all and about things that we could be using hours and hours and hours about this theme. But unfortunately, you know, we don't want to be here very heavy about this theme. And I do believe that what you said is right. We have covered a little bit what people need to know. If anyone wants to go deeper, you just, Google Jadro or ceramics in Spain, and you will have all the history that you need to know.
Or if you want to go even deeper in about Spanish ceramics and tiles and all that, you can join Jorge's tour to the south of Spain. You're going to find the Alhambra, the place where you find the most beautiful, beautiful tiles in Spain.
And the Alcázar in Sevilla. Don't forget that.
We have been talking about the two of them. I mean, Where can they find all the info for your tour?
Okay, well, if you go into Traveling with Jorge in Google, I will be there.
Jorge, thank you very much, and I shall see you next week.
Thank you, Francisco. It's been a pleasure as usual. Thank you very much indeed. Francisco, have a wonderful week.
You too. Adios, amigos.
And as usual, we want to thank all our listeners for being there every week, letting us sharing our talks. Follow us in Spanish Loops in Facebook, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or your favorite platform.
And in Instagram, you can find us as the Spanish Loops Podcast, no spaces, all together. If you want to find us the quickest way, just Google Spanish Loops Podcast and you will find us. Hasta la vista, amigos.
See you next week.